Well, I want to thank you very much for spending the hour with us today. Yoko Ono has been our guest, musician, artist, peace activist. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkshire, Hove de Caduce, Aaron Mate, Anjali Kamik, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Ricardo Lobo, Carrie Mache, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, our website, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 5:59, time almost for Off the Wall. Okay, here I am. I'm sorry. Got into a fight with the delay machine. I'm sorry. It was actually my fault. It's a misunderstanding. But it's all sorted out now. No hard feelings, right? Okay. All right, just had the wrong button pushed. But everything has been worked out, and we're here for another live edition of the program on this Tuesday evening. And a programming note, next week we will not be live. Next week at this time I will be in Brazil for the first time in my life. And that means that you will be hearing a show that came from Italy. That's just the way it works. We're one country behind on the show. So next week, the Italian show that we taped over there. And I guess sometime in the future there'll be a Brazilian show. But tonight, it's an American show. And you're welcome to call it. Our phone number is country code 1. And you need the country code anyway in this country for different reasons. Phone number 631-632-9872. That spells out 631-632-WUSB. We won't take phone calls immediately, so don't run to the phone already because you'll just be wasting your time. But maybe in about 20 minutes or so? Yeah, that sounds about right. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, as I said, Tuesday night. Talking about the decline and fall of Western civilization and all the others as well. Exciting times we live in. And I'm thrilled to death with this whole turkey story. I really am. Have you been following this? If you haven't, you're missing one heck of a story. Apparently, Turkey is really pissed off at the United States right now. And also at Iraqi Kurds. Two things happening at exactly the same time. Just to give you a brief summation. That's right. Previously, in the Iraq melodrama. Well, here's the situation as it stands. Turkey has always supported the United States. Oh, another thing. I'm sick. Yeah, this really makes things all the more fun. Okay, Turkey has supported the United States in its endeavors to bring democracy and Christianity all around the world, or whatever it is we're trying to do. And Turkey has been the launching point, the supply route, and overall pal of ours in the region. And were it not for them, it would be very difficult to continue the occupation of Iraq. Not impossible, but very difficult. So, enter the Kurds. The Kurds are, of course, the people in northern Iraq that have been liberated by the fall of Saddam Hussein. The problem with the Kurds in northern Iraq is that they're very good friends with the Kurds of southern Turkey. In fact, they're the same people many times. And so that has led to all sorts of arguments and disputes and missiles being lobbed over borders and things like that. And last week, Turkey pretty much said, you know what, enough of this. We're going to go across the border and kick your asses. We've had it. We're done. We're done talking. We're done just allowing you to fire artillery at us and launch attacks and things like that. No more. We don't care what the United States says. We're going over there. We're going to kick your asses. And worse to that effect. Okay. United States not too pleased with this whole thing, obviously, because, well, you know, when you invade a country, you kind of want to be the only invaders. And if another country invades the same country, it's kind of like it's kind of demeaning. It's kind of emasculating, you know what I mean? So, obviously, the United States doesn't want another invasion of the same country. Sort of says that we didn't do it right. And say anything about this country, one thing that we take great pride in, it's the invasions. You know, we kind of perfected it. Oh, sure, Napoleon, he got his feet wet. And all kinds of other dictators over the years, over the centuries, have experimented with invasion. But the United States, come on, ever since we started this country, invading left and right, and sometimes incorporating into the country and then having a bigger invading force. So it's very important to us. Very important to us in this country that we do this right. Okay? So Turkey comes in and kind of messes the whole thing up. We don't really want that. All right, so there are negotiations, all sorts happening to try and prevent this from going on. But at the same exact moment, same exact time, you have to wonder about the universe and how it all plays out. a House subcommittee decides to issue a proclamation that nearly 100 years ago, the Turks did in fact commit genocide against the Armenians. Yeah, the Armenians. They're pretty much leaving people alone at the moment, and they're being pulled back into this whole controversy. Because back in the days of World War I, there was more unpleasantness, and lots and lots of Armenians were slaughtered at the hands of the Turks, which they admit. They admit, yes, we did this, but they did it to us, too. It was a war. So, yeah, we killed a huge number of Armenians, but it wasn't genocide. And they take great exception at this House subcommittee declaring that it was. First of all, I don't understand. There's several things I don't understand. Well, there's a whole lot of things I don't understand. But in this particular case, why in God's name is it important for a House subcommittee to tell us, or I don't know who they're telling, their version of something that happened almost 100 years ago? Not saying who was right, not saying who was wrong. What I will say is, whoever is calling me right now during my show is a jerk, because you know I'm on the air, and yet you make my phone ring. Yeah. Anyway. Where was I? See, that throws my whole train of concentration off. I should have turned my phone off, but it's in my jacket on the other side of the room. I can't get to it. I have to leave the microphone. I don't even know what I was talking about anymore. What was it, the Yankees? They blew it this year, didn't they? I mean, they could be playing Boston right now, and they're not. Cleveland is. And now Cleveland's going to kick Boston's ass, and they'll be facing Colorado for the first time in the World Series. Colorado, amazingly enough, has never been in the World Series. And Cleveland, by the way, has not won in 60 years. Think about that. Think about... Oh, I wasn't talking about that. Look, I'm sorry. Listen, when the phone rings, I get all flustered and... Where was I? I was in Turkey? Turkey. Genocide, Armenia. Right. Okay. So the House subcommittee, who are they talking to? Who needs to hear it from them? You know, historians, yeah, okay, fine. Let historians say, yeah, this is what happened. This is the evidence that we have. But now, I mean, was the Suffolk County Legislature going to be next? They're going to tell us what happened in World War II? Why do we need these people to tell us? That's what I don't get. Okay, there's that. And then there's, why does Turkey care so much? Why do they care what this handful of politicians says in the United States? That I don't get. And the final thing I don't get is the timing. The timing of this. At this particular moment, right when the Kurds are launching offensives and Turkey is swearing vengeance. Right then. I mean, sometimes you have to believe in a god to make all this happen at the same time. Now, why am I so thrilled by this? Because it completely messes up the U.S. plans in Iraq. Completely. On every level. And I say, if it takes calling the people of Turkey 100 years ago genocidal maniacs to get us kicked out of Iraq, then I'm willing to do it. And then we can apologize to them later. Although, to be honest, genocide is a pretty popular thing. Everybody commits genocide. Not people, that is, but every country. The United States is guilty of genocide. What do you think happened to the Native Americans? They're all gone. That wasn't an accident. All sorts of bad things in our history. I don't know how we'd feel if the Turkish House subcommittee of some sort decided to say that about us. You have my permission. But yeah, you know, it probably did happen like that. People tend to get all caught up in the nationalistic fervor of the moment, and genocide is a completely logical outcome. Not logical in the way that that it's thought out. Logical in the fact that yeah, this is what happens when you have a bunch of maniacs running around with flags and guns. It could very well have happened. And I don't think anybody around now can say, no, we definitely did not do that, or no, you definitely did do that. There's really no way to know without any first-hand evidence. You can speculate. You can theorize. But there's just no way you can say definitively, no, we did not do that. kind of like the head of Blackwater. You see this guy? He knows exactly what happened on that street in Iraq a few weeks ago, where the civilians were massacred by Blackwater guards. He knows that they were being fired upon by small arms. He knows that the guards did nothing wrong. He wasn't there, but he knows this. Why? Well, I guess he has an agenda. I guess he's trying to cover his ass. But all the evidence points elsewhere. So, kind of an interesting parallel there. But, yeah, Turkey, you know, let's piss them off even more. I mean it. I mean, let's just get them to kick us out of there, one way or another. Oh, yeah, we'll have to come through Kuwait or something, or Jordan. My God, that'll be fun to supply the troops. But I think the most important thing is to put an end to this nonsense once and for all. This is fascinating. You got to hear this. And as this show is geared towards people who don't pay any attention for all the other hours of the week, this is something that you need to hear. Do you remember this guy who was the commander of the coalition forces in Iraq? How long ago was that? A couple of years ago? 2003, 2004? General Ricardo Sanchez. Remember that name? I'm sure we've mentioned it many times on this program when he was over there commanding the coalition. But now he's singing a completely different tune. He says, American political leaders cost American lives on the battlefield with their lust for power. Yeah. He called the Iraq War a nightmare with no end in sight, for which he said the Bush administration, the State Department, and Congress all share blame. Oh, man! Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. He told a group of military reporters in Arlington, Virginia, last Friday, that such dereliction of duty by a military officer would mean immediate dismissal or court-martial, but the politicians have not been held accountable. And this is the kind of talk you hear at an anti-war rally. That's coming from a former coalition commander, a commander only 3 years ago. Let's continue listening to what he has to say, because I think it's rather important. He said the Iraq war plan from the start was catastrophically flawed, unrealistically optimistic, and the administration has not provided the resources necessary for victory, which he said the military could never achieve on its own. Still, he said, and this is where I guess we're going to differ, the U.S. cannot pull out of Iraq without causing chaos that would have global implications. After more than 4 years of fighting, America continues its desperate struggle in Iraq without any concerted effort to devise a strategy that will achieve victory in that war-torn country or in the greater conflict against extremism. Sanchez pointed to what he said was neglect and incompetence at the National Security Council level, which has put the U.S. military into an intractable situation in Iraq. And, there was a response from the people who still are playing the game over there. Spokeswoman Kate Starr issued a short response, National Security Council, who said, we appreciate his service to the country. As General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker said, there's more work to be done, but progress is being made in Iraq. And that's what we're focused on now. I love PR. Sanchez retired in 2006, by the way, only a year ago, and he said it was his duty to obey orders and not object publicly when he was on active duty. But now that he is retired, he has an obligation to speak out. While the politicians espouse a rhetoric designed to preserve their reputations and their political power, our soldiers die, he said. The administration has ignored messages from field commanders that warned repeatedly that our military alone could not achieve victory without corresponding help from the State Department. Our national leadership ignored the lessons of World War II as we entered into this war, and to this day continue to believe that victory can be achieved through the application of military power alone. From a catastrophically flawed, unrealistically optimistic war plan to the administration's latest surge strategy, this administration has failed to employ and synchronize its political, economical, and military power. Wow. Unbelievable. I mean, we're used to hearing words like that, but to hear those words coming from somebody who, up until quite recently, was one of the people involved in the operation itself. That's a real nail in the casket, isn't it? Yeah, these guys have to be held accountable. Will they ever be held accountable? Well, answer me this. First of all, let's use this whole Blackwater thing as a microcosm for what's going on in Iraq, because it is. We're in there intimidating people and shooting randomly and basically turning potential friends into enemies. That's what we're doing. Us being the United States of America, and unfortunately it does reflect on all of us. We're paying for it, after all. Every one of us is paying for it. So we look at that. We look at what's going on with Blackwater. We look at what's going on with the U.S. soldiers all over the place. And I forget where I was going with this. Sorry, I completely lost my train of thought, and my phone didn't even ring this time. Let's see, parallel between Blackwater and the U.S. policy in general. I'll get back to it, I'm sure. I got to write these things down. But basically, we took a situation where we could have done something to win over people, and instead we're completely alienating people, alienating the entire globe as well. And we can't seem to admit, I remember where I was going with this, we can't seem to admit when we're wrong. And we protect others who are obviously wrong. And that's where I was going with this. Can you even find out anywhere the names of the people involved in the massacre? The massacre of less than a month ago? No, they're protected. They are completely protected. Iraq's Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, has asked the U.S. State Department to pull Blackwater out of Iraq, saying the private contractors committed unprovoked and random killings in a September 16th shooting. Advisor Sami al-Askari has said the Iraqis have concluded their investigation into the shooting at Nusra Square in Baghdad. He said the United States is still waiting for the findings of the American investigation, but al-Maliki and most Iraqi officials are completely satisfied with the findings of their probe and are insisting that Blackwater leave the country. U.S. Embassy spokeswoman, Marimbi Natango, said the Iraqi-U.S. Joint Commission met and is proceeding with its work on the matter. We need to let the Joint Commission do its work, she said, adding that once the Joint Commission has finished, it will make policy recommendations. Now, Blackwater CEO and founder Eric Prince, that's Eric with a K, has said the team was attacked and was defending itself at an intersection not far from the heavily guarded green zone on September 16. 17 Iraqis were killed, including women and children, and 27 were wounded. Prince said the guards did not commit deliberate violence. There was definitely incoming small arms fire from insurgents. Definitely. I know it. Ho-ho. You can't tell me otherwise. The U.S. State Department and the FBI are investigating the incident. However, the first U.S. soldiers to arrive on the scene after the incident told military investigators they found no evidence contractors were fired upon. The soldiers found evidence suggesting the guards fired on cars attempting to leave and found weapon casings on the scene matching only those used by U.S. military and contractors. But yet, Eric Prince knows that that is not true. Yeah. Who are these people? Will we ever find out? Will their names be constantly kept secret? You know, you commit a parking infraction and your name gets printed in newspapers these days. You're accused of all sorts of ridiculous crimes that you're later acquitted of, but yet the moment it happens, your name, your face, they're plastered all over the place. Just turn on your 11 o'clock news. You'll see. You'll see people accused of all sorts of things. How many of them do you think actually are guilty? All of them? Not likely. There's got to be at least one innocent person a year on those nightly newscasts. But do you ever hear about that? Do you ever hear when they are found not guilty? No. You hear their names, you see their faces, because there's a presumption that if you're accused of something in this country, that, well, you must have done something to deserve it. And in this case, there is just so much more, so much evidence, and yet we protect them. We protect them. We're all guilty on this. Remember President Jimmy Carter? Yeah, President Jimmy Carter, who I didn't like when he was president, but he's great now. He's amazing. And he's come out and said the United States tortures prisoners in violation of international law. I don't think it, he said. I know it. Our country, for the first time in my lifetime, and he's pretty old now. He's like, what, 80? He's getting up there. The first time in my lifetime has abandoned the basic principles of human rights. We've said that the Geneva Conventions do not apply to those people in Abu Ghraib prison and Guantanamo. And we said we can torture prisoners and deprive them of an accusation of a crime to which they are accused. Carter also said President Bush creates his own definition of human rights. His comments come on the heels of an October 4th article in the New York Times, published in the United States, disclosing the existence of secret Justice Department memorandums supporting the use of harsh interrogation techniques. These include head slapping, simulated drownings, and frigid temperatures. The White House last week confirmed the existence of the documents, but would not make them public. And responding to that newspaper report, Bush defended the techniques used, saying this government does not torture people. Asked about Bush's comments, Carter said on a CNN program, "That's not an accurate statement if you use the international norms of torture, as has always been honored, certainly in the last 60 years since the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was promulgated. But you can make your own definition of human rights and say we don't violate them, and you can make your own definition of torture and say we don't violate them." And after reading a transcript of Carter's remarks, a senior White House official said, "Our position is clear. We don't torture." It's amazing. They just don't learn, do they? They just keep saying the same thing. They're like robots. And the official also went on to say, "It's just sad to hear a former president speak like that." Hey, I agree with you there. It is really sad to hear the kinds of things that are being said about this nation, about this government, throughout the world and at home. It's sad. It's pathetic. I just hope it goes beyond that. All right. You know what I like to do? I like to read some letters, because letters always lead into interesting discussions as well. And we'll take phone calls in just a little bit. Again, note the phone number, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Won't be on live next week, so if you have something to say, give us a call, probably in a few minutes, maybe 5-6 minutes, about that? Yeah, make a note. Where shall we begin? Dear Emmanuel, it was, by the way, our email address, otw@2600.com. OTW, of course, stands for Off the Wall, which is the name of this show, heard on WUSB in Stony Brook and over the Internet and in outer space if you follow the FM signal as it keeps going. Dear Emmanuel, it was surprising to hear in the last Off the Wall that a hacker conference took place in a squat, of course, referring to the hacker conference in Italy, which actually we'll be focusing on next week. So if you thought that was interesting, you definitely want to tune in next week, because the program will be coming to you actually from three countries, Italy, San Marino, and Vatican City. Yes, those are three countries. Anyway, what was also surprising was the day after, when I noticed that the Italian organizer of that conference mentioned at the talk given at Hope Number 6, called Europe Has Hackers Too, he mentioned there that it would be happening in a squat. So, yeah, this was, I guess, documented in advance. So it seems hackers also have some interest in squats. I've lived in squats myself years ago, but good squats are getting harder to find, at least around where I live. It used to be different. The main reason of why things have changed, in my opinion, is because of squatters themselves. They used to be, and some of them still are, clever people who would occupy abandoned houses for the sake of making use of them, in the same manner some guys take control of remote computers because they are not used to half of their capacity. Interesting parallel. They spend a lot of time studying the laws to find flaws in them. They exploit the flaws so that in turn their eviction could be delayed by months or even years. These days it seems there are a few clever squatters left. They stay closely together, and the rest of them, well, the rest of them are the rest. What I find disturbing is that when good guys find clever, fun, and useful tricks, villains, and you can put in here anything such as governments, crooks, etc., villains always find out about them. The whole thing then becomes either illegal or controlled, restricted, and a lot harder to do. I guess there's a definite parallel there between the world of hacking, where we try and explain things and show vulnerabilities, and yeah, I guess information can be used in a bad way. If idiots get their hands on it, they can turn it into something bad. But is that a reason to stay silent and to keep things to yourself and to develop cliques and believe in security through obscurity and things like that? I tend to think not. Anyway, continuing here, hacking is to technology what jazz is to music, yet are we even aware of the full definition for technology? Can we call jazz music music that was made with vegetables? Thank you. I just wanted a reference to that, of course, referring to the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra, which we featured on this program, and on Off the Hook. And if you want to hear it, tune into the show we had a few weeks ago where we played it. Thank you. I don't know how to pronounce your name. It has a four in it. Manny, I'm going to assume the four is supposed to be an H, so then you're Manny Hack, I guess. I don't know. Why do people spell their names with numbers? Seriously, I mean, I don't know how to pronounce that. I don't know how to pronounce when you alternate uppercase and lowercase. I mean, yeah, you can spell it that way, but are you supposed to say it differently? You're supposed to emphasize things? It's like we ran out of names and we have to use whatever's left. You ever see the nicknames people come up with these days? All the good ones are taken. So they have to misspell words and call themselves that. Now, I'm not putting you down, Manny Hack, whatever your name is. I don't know. I'm not putting you down. I'm just saying, in general, this is a disturbing trend. Because, you know, I like words. I like to express myself using words. And I like to read words. I like to see words and hear them. And that's why they're words. And when you start making up things, it's really kind of strange. Although, I found this on the internet, because that's where you find things these days. And you might just want to try this. You might just want to try this on your own, because it really is fascinating. You take a paragraph, any paragraph of something that you can read, all right? And what you do is you keep the first and the last letter of each word where it's supposed to be, and you jumble the letters in between. You can put them in any order you want. And then read the paragraph, and you'll find that you're able to read that paragraph without any problem. It's really kind of scary, actually. So, yeah, you can misspell all these words. As long as you get the first and last letter correct, most people have no trouble at all knowing what word it is. Because apparently our brains work in such a way where we know the first letter, we know the last letter, and we figure out the rest. Human brain is indeed a terrible thing. Dear Emmanuel, I've been meaning to write to you for years, but it's very hard to put every word down that I want to tell you. However, I've made an attempt, and here is a 55-page letter. No, only kidding. I became 29 on the 29th of July, and I'm Norwegian. That's some coincidence. Yeah. I've actually listened to every single episode of Off the Wall, Off the Hook, and Brain Damage. Enclosed is the bill for mental therapy that I must now undergo. No, I'm sorry. I keep making sarcastic remarks about this letter. I don't know why. There are all kinds of good possibilities here. Every episode of Off the Hook, Off the Wall, and Brain Damage. Wow. I guess now's a good time to tell you we have more shows we're going to be putting up, more old shows, probably within the next few months. So get ready. It was about 2 years ago when I finished listening to the whole archive. Every night, when lying in bed, I listen to a show, and two shows on nights when I couldn't sleep. I find it very comfortable and safe to listen to you. And I... Wow, I don't often hear that. I wanted to write to let you know how much I appreciate it. And I appreciate this, these sentiments. I appreciate letters like this. Really, does make you think. You're doing radio, and people get inside the world, actually find it interesting and comfortable and safe. Wow. You've really made an impact on the community and me, and it's very much appreciated. Every show you make, several comments that just makes me laugh out loud. And you also address serious issues that are right on the money. And I really like it when you explore places you go to and systems you connect to, when you describe what you see and hear. That's extremely immersive and fun. Well, you know, it's radio. It's radio, and that's how I was taught radio, that it's expressive, it's a way of describing things to people. Oh my God, look at that! It's a dragon that just came into the studio. See, I just did that. I just made a dragon appear in your head. You can do that on radio. Television, it's harder. In real life, people just look at you like you're crazy. But radio, yeah, you can do things like that. Now, of course, if a dragon does come in, no one's going to believe me. I also really like the commenting with the spooky music in the background, which we don't have any of tonight, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, no spooky music. Hopefully I'll see you someday, and thank you personally. Drop by if you're ever in Bergen, Norway. I just might do that. I've been in Norway before. Thanks, Esben, for writing. Next time I need a fix of Stavropulse, I'll go over there. Stavropulse being, of course, the sausage I got addicted to in Norway. Actually, I need a fix of that right now. But you can't get it anyplace. You can't get it anyplace else. Every time I travel someplace, I get addicted to things that I can't get. Like the latest thing, when I went to Singapore, I got addicted to this Japanese seaweed. Yeah, it comes in packages. And there's a wasabi flavor that I currently have 3 bags that I smuggled into this country. I don't think it's even right to call it smuggling. I think I was allowed to do that, but I didn't ask. It's really spicy. It's strips of seaweed. It's really good. I don't know what the brand name is, but they have like this little cartoon character. It looks exactly like Cartman from South Park. But you can't get it in this country. In fact, I even went to some Japanese stores I know of, and they said, you know what? This is Chinese. This isn't even Japanese. It's Japanese seaweed, and you bought it in Singapore, and it's imported from Thailand, but it's actually Chinese. Oh, I love Asia. Just a whole lot of finger pointing. Anyway, so yeah, I can't get that. I have to go back to Singapore just to get seaweed. I'll have to go back to Norway just to get sausage. And if I want a crispy sandwich from Haagen-Dazs, well, I guess I can go to Japan or I can go to Europe, because we don't have those either, even though we make Haagen-Dazs here in New Jersey. And I'm not saying I'm in New Jersey. I'm saying New Jersey is close by. So people think Haagen-Dazs comes from some exotic place. No, it comes from New Jersey. That's a fact. Okay, what else? Dear Emmanuel, I was listening to your show today, and I heard you mention the 2 women who were killed by a private security company in Iraq, and I remembered an article I read in the newspaper. It was reported in a major Australian newspaper, and I think it's the first time this newspaper has reported real news. It's essentially a tabloid. They reported that it's an Australian company that did the murdering. The article from the Herald Sun, the Melbourne edition, on Thursday the 4th, on page 19. I have no idea. I had no idea we had similar forces operating in Iraq, and it's just infuriating. But I really shouldn't be surprised. We just copy everything you guys do. It's incredibly depressing. Well, always happy to help. Thanks. Thanks for the shows. They are awesome. Let's see what else we have here. I listen to your radio shows every week through podcast, but I still listen. Subscriber to 2600, supporter of WUSB. Can't get enough of your work. In your October 9th show, that would be last week, you played some music in the background. You said the name, but I'm not sure I made it out right. And you are referring to the Italian musician, DJ, whatnot, called Gigi D'Agostino. I'll spell it for you, all right? I'll make it easy. Gigi, G-I-G-I, that's the first name. D'Agostino, D'Agostino. And plug it into Wikipedia, you can find out everything there is to know about him, and track down his music that way. It's good stuff. Hey there, Emmanuel. I was just catching up on last week's Off the Wall, and the Gina 6 school beating case really caught my interest. It's good to see that there are normal, non-racist people out there who see the weirdness of situations like these. As you said, there should be no difference whether it is a black-on-white or white-on-black crime as far as hate crimes go. If This would have been one black kid beaten on by six white kids. A public outcry for hate crime would have been staggering, but in this case, they're rallying behind the black kids. I just don't get how people can do this. Who cares if he hung a noose or if it was related at all? The fact is, the six kids who beat him up should be charged the same as everyone else. Well, that's, I think, the issue here, is whether they're being charged the same as anyone else. That is a legitimate question. And I think some parallel cases need to be looked at. If these black people really want to be so equal, then why is it that they think they can get the law to work different for them? Okay, you know, I know what you're saying here, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but the way you're saying it, I know you're not aware of this, but the way you're saying it kind of buys into some rather disturbing things. You know, if they want to be so equal, no, they are equal. They're not trying to become our equals. They are equal from birth. That is something we have to accept, all of us. Are they treated equally? That's a whole different question. But to phrase it that way, if they want to be, you're making it sound like it's a privilege, not a right. If they want this, they're going to have to earn it. And I'm sure that's not how you meant it, but that's the way it sounds. And I hear that from a lot of people. And you have to understand also that this is not something monolithic. Not everybody feels the same way. There's differences of opinions in every community. And to paint everybody with the same brush, that's also closing yourself off to a lot of what's really going on out there. Anyway, continuing with your letter. It is seen in so many cases where black people beat up a white person and the media says nothing of it. But as soon as one non-white is beat up or murdered by a white person, it is instantly a hate crime on all the evening news programs. I'm not sure if that's true. I'm not sure if the media says nothing of it when it's black people attacking a white. I just don't see that. I know a lot of people believe that, and a lot of people think that their race isn't being treated equally. I think everybody feels that way. But I just don't see it. I see inequalities in the way that this case is being discussed. And you raise some good points. Yeah, if it was six white kids beating up a black kid, probably would be calls for hate crime. And I think this should be at least investigated. All right, continuing. Why is it that a non-white person can safely call a white person a cracker or a honky or any other racial slur and not have any actions against them? But if a white person was to either A, call them a nigger, sorry for the use of the word, or B, retaliate to the black person's comment with violence, they are charged with a hate crime and labeled a racist when really it was the non-white who was being racist. First of all, big difference in the gravity of the words. All right, cracker, honky, it's like calling somebody a homeboy or, you know, some other thing that is not nearly as offensive and doesn't have the historical ramifications. So, yeah, it is different. It is definitely different. But then you also look at society and you realize that the word's being used constantly in other communities without any offense taken whatsoever. It makes it a lot more difficult. And I don't think it's realistic to just say, okay, stop using that word, and everyone's just going to obey and not use it anymore. I think words change over time, and you have to look at the meaning behind it, the intent upon which such a word was uttered in the first place. It's a complicated situation. It's very complicated. I mean, Quentin Tarantino used the word many times in Pulp Fiction. Now we're going to say, oh, you're a racist, you use the N-word. I don't think so. I don't think you could really call him that. Society has different rules at different times for different people. Okay, continuing with this letter here. I really hope these kids get charged, and I hope that the jury's decision in the case is not swayed by these guys are heroes, protesters. If the kids are really doing this because of the noose incident, could they not just gone and talk to the police or the school administration? Or did they know that even if they beat him, they would be supported by their people for the justice against white racists? I hope the general public can wake up to issues such as these and see just what really is happening, signed Lenny. Well, Lenny, thanks for your letter. What an interesting case is being raised in this. What bothers me is just, I guess, the blind following I see. Everybody is kind of ignoring disturbing parts of this case, namely the violence. And when you have six people beating up one person, knocking him unconscious, and by reports I've heard, continuing to kick him even after that. And I read various websites and petitions that make no mention of the violence, and simply mention the fact that these guys were charged with attempted murder. You know, I've talked to a number of people about this, and if you were kicked into unconsciousness by six people, you know, attempted murder isn't that far away. It really isn't. People have died from less. The real question is it an unequal case? Is it something that if it happened the other way around, would somebody have simply been given a slap on the wrist and told not to do it again? That's what's unfair. And that's what you protest. You protest when people get away with things that they shouldn't get away with. And that happens a lot. That happens every time a cop kills somebody. They pretty much walk away. That's where you need to be focusing your rage. I'm not saying let these guys rot in jail. Obviously, if it's a ridiculous sentence, people should protest it. But I'm seeing the other extreme. I mean, two of these guys were guests of honor at the Black Entertainment Television Rap Awards. They gave out an award. They announced the winner. I mean, that's not right. That's not right. These guys were involved in a violent attack against somebody. If you had a choice, this is an interesting question. If you had a choice between seeing something that was offensive to you and your people, such as a noose, which would be worse, seeing that or having the stuffing beaten out of you by a bunch of people? Now, to me, the answer is very simple. It's an easy answer. Violence is always worse than something symbolic. I know that a lot of people disagree with that. They think a swastika is a horrible thing to see. And it is. But you can turn your back on that. You can paint over it. You can find out who's responsible for it. You can do all sorts of other things. But when you're attacked by a mob, I always think that's crossing a really big line that should never be excused. Okay, I guess we've opened it up for all kinds of discussion and topics. So, I'll give out the phone number, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. If we get a few calls, then it's worth the trouble of going to delay, because it really is a lot of trouble. Really is. Major pain. But we'll do it. We'll do it if we have to. I know it takes a couple of minutes for the signal to go out over the internet, so I'll keep checking. If I see two or three lines lit up, we'll go to delay and we'll take some phone calls in the minutes we have left, which really aren't that many. Let's see what else. The music from Pisa was great. Maybe you can make a whole show of different music from radio stations and cities you have traveled to. And by the way, I don't think it's pirate radio. Assuming I found the station's website, you can listen to the live MP3 stream, www.m2o.it/m2o/player, and see that they do broadcast in Pisa on 98.6 FM. If you type in that URL, www.m2o.it/m2o/freqenze/toscana. Toscana. Okay, just wanted to thank you for the great show, and as a Finn, to comment on a few points regarding last week's show. This is when we had Red Hacked on, talking about the Finnish Army. In the interview, it became clear that all Finnish males must serve in the armed forces. However, this is not correct. In the archaic Finnish conscription service, or system rather, the military service certainly is the default option, with over 80% serving in the military, but no mention was made of the alternative, a 13-month civil service, generally consisting of work service in various public institutions such as hospitals, schools, and libraries, or with NGOs. One might also point out that the stated defensive network, or nature rather, of the defense forces, rest ultimately on political will, and as is well known, during times of war, political attitudes shift to the right, with results anyone can imagine. A look at history is instructive. In 1941, the Finnish Defense Forces, alongside their brothers in arms, the Nazis of Germany, you may have heard of them, invaded the Soviet Union, not only advancing to regain territories lost in the previous war, but to expand, with many calling for the creation of a Greater Finland. Greater Finland, yes. By annexing Soviet territories in order to unite the country with brother peoples to the east. Not only that, but concentration camps, so-called transfer camps, were created in the occupied territories, to which 40% of the civilians deemed to be non-Finnic were interned, and of whom about 18 to 33% died. I'm not saying that Finland or its defense forces are a significant threat to anyone, at least when compared to the American military, but simply that moral problems of organized violence are universal, and comparing one army to another does not address the key moral issues inherent in the nature of both militarism, in the nature of both, period. Militarism is militarism, regardless of the national flag it's wrapped in. Signed, Laurie. Thank you, Laurie, for that very informative letter. It's always good to hear from people from other countries, especially the countries that we speak about. All right. No calls. Can you believe this? So sad. So sad when people don't care. Oh, well. Let's look at a couple other wacky stories out there. This is interesting. A state legislator surprised a high school class when the computer he was using projected a photo of a nude woman during a lecture on how a bill becomes a law. I don't know what all the confusion is. There's always a naked woman involved when a bill becomes a law at some point. But regardless, State Representative Matthew Barrett was giving a civics lesson Tuesday when he inserted a data memory stick into the school computer, and the projected image of a topless woman appeared instead of the graphics presentation he had downloaded. I love this country. Police interviewed Barrett and school officials and seized the data memory stick and the computer to determine... Who called the police? For God's sake, what is wrong with us? A topless woman accidentally makes it onto a slideshow, and the police are called? Yeah, I know they were kids. I know they were kids. They said there were a few snickers. Actually, state representative said this, that there were a few snickers from the approximately 20 students in the senior government class at Norwalk High School, that's in Norwalk, Ohio, when the image appeared. He said he immediately pulled the memory stick out of the computer. He said he finished his lecture using printouts and then met with the school's principal and technology staff to examine the stick. He said... They spent a good hour looking at that thing. He said the school's technology director determined the stick had a directory of nude images, in addition to Barrett's presentation on civics lessons. I have no idea where these came from, the Democrat said. Of course, we have to know what his political affiliation is, don't we? He said the data memory stick was a gift he received about 3 weeks ago from a legislative liaison from the... Oh, my God, I just can't go on. So... I mean, okay, it's not appropriate to show topless images to a high school class, I guess, but, you know, they probably all seen something like that before. It's not the worst thing in the world. And certainly, for God's sake, why involve police in something like this? We criticize Iran for being all, like, crazy as far as... sexual liberation and modesty and things like that, but my God, something like this. It really was an accident, I'm certain of that. I don't know who would do something like that on purpose, especially if you're an elected representative. What would you be hoping to achieve? Okay, what else? Here's another example of how we are just so sensitive. So incredibly sensitive about everything. The producers of Desperate Housewives apologized to the Philippines government on, actually this was two Wednesdays ago, for questioning the training of Philippine doctors in the season premiere of the ABC television series. The producers of Desperate Housewives and ABC Studios offer our sincere apologies for any offense caused by the brief reference in the season premiere, they said in a statement. There is no intent to disparage the integrity of any aspect of the medical community in the Philippines, they said. The offending comment was made when Terry Hatcher's character, Susan Meyer, asked to see a consulting physician's diploma, quote, because I want to make sure that they're not from some med school in the Philippines, unquote. Please. It's a character. It's a fictitious character. There's all sorts of people with ideas of where medical training is good and where it's inferior. And to have to even apologize for something like this is bizarre. The comment was interpreted as a racial slur and caused an outrage in Manila, eliciting complaints from the highest government circles. Executive Secretary Eduardo Hermida demanded an apology on behalf of our Filipino professionals. So you can't have people on television, fictitious characters, saying stupid things because it might offend somebody. Now, I always thought that that fiction was sort of supposed to represent what's going on out there in real life. If you stifle anything that might be slightly offensive, you're not going to really be representing real life, are you? Why not have the fictitious character apologize rather than the people who obviously don't feel that way in the first place? Or maybe it's not so obvious, but I don't think very many people would take that all that seriously. But who knows? All right, what else? Yeah, I see we have phone calls now, but, you know, it's a couple minutes before we have to go. This is what happens every single show. I know it only takes a couple minutes for the signal to get down the internet. I know that. I've tested it. We'll just have to wait another 2 weeks. We won't be able to take phone calls next week because we're on tape, as it were. But I'd like to leave you with one more crazy story because this is just so funny. Here on Long Island, we've put up all the, well, we haven't done it, but our government has, for some reason, put up these electronic warning signs on the Northern State Parkway. Now, these signs, they basically tell you how far you are away from an intersection or an exit, I guess, and how many minutes it's going to take you to get there. And apparently these signs use EasyPass to calculate how many cars are in the way and how fast they're going and things like that. I'm not sure if the car is doing 150 miles an hour using EasyPass, do they tell you? You can get a huge amount of distance in a very brief amount of time. Not really sure how the technology works. But they had some snags. It started running about a week ago. It's a $450,000 system, which I think is a complete waste of money, and pure evidence right there that we can make a high-speed rail system if we wanted to, because the money is there. We just keep wasting it on things like this. The $450,000 system went online a week ago, but get this, a truck illegally entered the eastbound lanes, causing a traffic jam when it was unable to clear a bridge, and 20 minutes later, six of the system's 12 signs shut down. They were programmed only to recognize traffic moving at speeds of 10 miles per hour or faster, so the system assumed there were no cars in the parkway and went to sleep. Yeah, unbelievable. So that's a new system we have now. It adds nothing. It adds nothing at all to the whole travel experience because you already know how far away you are from various things, usually. And to find out how long it's going to take you to get there, I think you're kind of tempted to get there faster when you see something like that. Another example of waste. All right. OTW@2600.com. That's our email address. We're out of here for this week. Hopefully, next time people will call in earlier. We'll see you next time. Actually, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Next week, I'll be in Brazil, but the show will come to you from Italy. And hopefully, that won't be too confusing. Stay tuned for Finn. Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night. Your hair is smooth on the pillow. And
tremble.